Good morning. May it please the court. With respect to this case, there are the following distinct issues. One, whether Ms. Salvadori was denied equal protection. And the equal protection theory is based upon the following: whether there was a hostile environment. And the predicate for that, that's the first issue. The other issue, did the union fail to investigate the hostile environment claim? In the beginning, from 1993 through 1997, Ms. Salvadori had complained about discrimination in the workplace. Exhibit 26. She highlighted as early as March of 1993 that she was the victim of harassment, having been referred to as the green card. Through the time period, even through 1997, with the letter of September 25, she highlighted that she had been in the high school and on numerous occasions students were shouting back to her to go to the Philippines and go back to the middle school. The court below has articulated that the standard for this conduct was negligence, and highlighting that under a negligence theory, the plaintiff, the defendant, did all that was necessary. It has to be clear that from 93 even through 97, the time she was in the workplace, she had been highlighted as an individual from the students to go back to the Philippines. Comments and criticisms regarding her accent, etc. The record is also clear that the decision makers from 93 through 97 never took any remedial actions to investigate the matter.
Counselor, is there any evidence in this record to demonstrate that the school district was satisfied with her job performance?
With respect to the job performance, from the time she was in the middle school up until the time she went to the high school, there was ample evidence in the record whereby she had performed admirable and a quality performance. She was meeting the essential qualifications of her job.
Wasn't she called in and advised about problems with her relationship with the students and not being able to control her class?
And that has to be
parents.
That is absolutely correct. That occurred, however, after the time she went to the high school. From the time she was in the middle school, there was not that kind of comment. Even taking arguendo that there was in fact some concerns about it, that remains a disputed issue of fact.
Wasn't she put on that plan of assistance while she was in the middle school?
She was placed on the plan of assistance while she was in the middle school.
So, and she had significant problems while in the middle school. And I thought she moved to the high school because they wanted to give her a fresh start or something.
They wanted to give her a fresh start, and we have surrendered that argument on the plan of assistance as being an issue for denial of equal protection. We're not raising that as a concern. That was dealt with. What we are dealing with primarily on the equal protection, and the argument, the equal protection, is that whether she was subject to hostility.
Counsel, have you identified any similar situated non-minority that was treated differently?
And, Your Honor, with respect to that question, no, there is not on the racial hostility. The point of the matter is, she was told specifically about her accent, her national origin. The decision makers.
What we're talking about, that's not what I asked.
No.
Is there any other teacher, a non-minority, who has been treated differently with a similar problem?
Similar problem being the comments?
Not the comments. the evaluations of her lack of proper performance?
No, there was no other ones identified.
Did the teachers union investigate her complaints and decide not to go forward?
The evidence
represent her?
Pardon me?
Did they investigate her complaints and decide not to go forward based on her complaints?
The evidence in the record is that the union did not investigate the complaints. The evidence in the record is that the officials are saying that no one from the union ever came to investigate the complaints of racial discrimination.
I'm talking with her as a vis-a-vis that they did not represent her, you said.
That is correct. That is the assertion of our argument.
But didn't they look into it first and determine that they couldn't, that there wasn't anything there that they could rely on?
That was the conclusion they made.
What I'm talking about.
Yes. Okay. But when
they came to that conclusion, they had to do some investigating.
But the record and the proposed findings of fact in this matter, based upon the testimony of Mr. Hembrick, who was a member of the executive committee, is that he went to the union, he told them how she was being treated, that he had never seen anyone treated like her in 15 years. He testifies that no one did anything. This was and the proposed findings of fact in this record are 306, ARA 79 through 327 clearly demonstrate that when all of this was brought forward, that the union did nothing.
You know, Mr. Nunnery, I think the way to look at this case is the school district claims that she was not meeting their legitimate expectations. She's a new teacher in the beginning. They're trying to be a little tolerant with her. New teachers have problems. And later on, she continues to, in their view, maybe it's wrong, but in their view, not measure up to what she should be as a teacher. Now, she is resistant to all the criticisms, it seems, that are directed towards her, and maybe they were unjustified and so on, but I find very little evidence of national origin discrimination here. There's this stuff about the accent, but the union representative apparently determined that that was some students that had a hard time understanding what she was saying.
And I see that my time is up, but I think that this is...
Oh, you've got... That's your rebuttal time.
Right.
Now beginning.
Yeah, but with respect to this is... That is a casual dismissal. Is it appropriate to have this later in the classroom? Since you are Filipino, get on back to your homeland. Do this, do that. What she has testified in the September 25th letter is that from 1993, she was subject to constant reminders about her Filipino accent. Go back to the your green card. And then the letter of September 25th, she says, during my first 2 weeks, some students would shout at me to go home to the Philippines, go back to the middle school, call me names, and peek and slam doors. She also said that in her 1993 letter, it would be easy to simply focus on her performance. But is she an individual who has to be inside the school district subject to that kind of abuse? And the record is also clear that Ms. Glasgow, Mr. Freetag, they did nothing. And one important point in the matter is, even at the time of her termination, the president of the school board...
You've got 1 minute.
...has testified, the president of the school board has testified before terminating her, that he did not know anything about her complaints of discrimination in the workforce. What does that tell us by inference? That tells us that the district, the superintendent, paid very little attention to her discrimination claim from 1993 through 1997.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is John Murray. I represent the Franklin School District, Donna Schwichtenberg, and Murray Glasgow. There is a threshold determinative procedural issue that Mr. Nunnery has failed to address either here this morning or in his briefs. He failed to create any genuine issue of material fact on the record. Ms. Salvadori failed to create any such issue. The Eastern District of Wisconsin, like most districts in this circuit, has very specific summary judgment procedures that set out very specific burdens for the parties moving for and opposing summary judgment to demonstrate the absence or presence of a genuine issue of material fact. As the moving party, the school district had the obligation to set out its proposed undisputed material facts in separately numbered paragraphs with specific citations to the record. As the party opposing summary judgment, Ms. Salvadori had the burden of responding to any facts she thought were disputed with specific citations to the record demonstrating the existence of that dispute. If she failed to do that, by operation of the rule, Local Rule 56.2, subparagraph E, the facts are deemed admitted. The school district submitted 306 proposed facts. In response to 291 of those facts, Ms. Salvadori cited no portion of the record. She either expressly admitted the fact or implicitly admitted it by including as her response only the statement denied or an evidentiary objection. For the remaining 15, her responses were supplemental, not contradictory. Her response to proposed finding number 32 is illustrative. In that proposed finding, the school district said that Julia Lyons, who was an associate principal, was critical of Ms. Salvadori for referring to a child in front of the entire class as the kid with no teeth. To try to create a dispute of fact, Ms. Salvadori points to a performance evaluation 4 years later in which Ms. Lyons found her to be an adequate and competent teacher. Those facts are not contradictory. The district court, after looking at her 15 submissions, determined that all of those submissions were supplemental, not contradictory. Consequently, there were no disputes of material fact because she had failed to follow the procedures set out in local rules. This court has been very protective of district court's rights to create and strictly enforce local rules designed to ease the burden on district court judges in identifying whether a genuine issue of material fact exists. This case ends on the procedural error because the undisputed facts show that as a matter of law, the school district is entitled to summary judgment. There are only two claims Ms. Salvadori has appealed: her allegation that her employment ended because of her race and national origin, and her shotgun approach to her equal protection claim. On the claim that her employment ended because of her race and national origin, the parties are largely in agreement. They agree that Ms. Salvadori has no direct evidence of this. They agree that if she's to prove her claim, she must use the indirect burden-shifting method set out by the Supreme Court in McDonnell Douglas v. Burdine. They agree that she has the burden of establishing a prima facie case of discrimination, and they agree that one essential element of that prima facie case is showing that Ms. Salvadori was meeting the school district's legitimate expectations at the time it was decided to end her employment. Well, that time was the spring of 1998, when the school board voted that she would not have her teaching contract renewed for the next school year. To try to create a fact issue, Ms. Salvadori offers positive excerpts from her performance evaluations from 1991 to the spring of 1996. The most recent of those is 2 full years before the decision was made to end her employment. This court has said before, in both Hong and in Carrizano's cases cited in our brief, that that doesn't cut it. That says nothing. You cannot satisfy that essential element of your prima facie case by showing that you performed your job well at some prior time in your employment. The undisputed facts covering Ms. Salvadori's last 2 years of employment show that she was placed on a plan of assistance for teaching deficiencies, that her raise was denied for her last year, that she was transferred to a new school as a way of jump-starting her performance, that she was reprimanded by administrators for the very same problems that caused her to be on a plan of assistance in the first place, and that parents and students at both schools raised numerous complaints about her classroom management, her communication style, and that 2 different administrators were critical of her willingness to accept and acknowledge constructive criticism. Ms. Salvadori simply has offered no evidence on that essential issue of material fact, making all other facts immaterial. That leaves her equal protection claim. And Ms. Salvadori came to Franklin School District without any prior full-time teaching experience. This was her first job. Despite her inexperience, Ms. Salvadori apparently has viewed herself as not just a good teacher, not just a superlative teacher, but as a perfect teacher. Throughout her entire 8-year career, she never acknowledged the validity of any constructive criticism or any negative performance feedback. And by her own admission, she refused to change her teaching performance in any way in response to it. She came to view any negative performance feedback, whether it was from parents or students or administrators, as unjustified criticism of her that must be based on her race and national origin. And that's reflective in both her deposition testimony, which is part of this record, and in her approach to the equal protection claim. She argues that she was treated differently than other teachers with no evidence that she was similarly situated to those teachers. Mr. Nunnery's argument today focuses upon Ms. Salvadori's claim of racial harassment. Well, the only time she alleged harassment was when the school district placed her out on a plan of assistance in 1996. And when Dr. Glasgow tried to talk to her to find out the specifics of that allegation to try to conduct an investigation, Ms. Salvadori refused. As this court has stated, the law against harassment is not self-enforcing. You have an obligation to act reasonably. Ms. Salvadori can't choose to not participate in the investigation and then try to hold the school district responsible for that decision. Her other allegation is that high school students, during her first month at the high school, were disruptive between classes, called her names, made some comments that related to her race or national origin. When these comments were reported, the principal acted reasonably, which is all the law requires. My time is done. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court, on behalf of the union defendants, the sole claim against these defendants is that they failed to act in the face of known discrimination. The fatal defect with that argument is that there was no known discrimination for which the union would ignore. What the union did here was exactly what a union is supposed to do. When faced not only with claims under the collective bargaining agreement, but the claim by the plaintiff that she believed that the district was discriminating against her, the Franklin Education Association representative investigated that on several occasions. He looked at comparative evidence. He looked at what she was claiming. He did not find any evidence of discrimination. He did not proceed on a separate claim of race discrimination. They didn't stop there. They went to the state organization, an attorney with the State Wisconsin Education Association Council, met with Ms. Salvadori, reviewed her evidence, asked her if she had witnesses. She provided some witnesses. Council interviewed those witnesses. At the conclusion of that investigation, the union determined that there was no basis for discrimination. Never in this case has there been a finding by any agency, by any court certainly, that any discrimination has occurred here. So the claim of the plaintiff that the union ratified this discrimination is simply without the basic predicate that a claim under this theory, under the Goodman v. Lukens theory, simply must fail. Mr. Counsel for Plaintiff mentions a single comment by one of the teachers involved, Mr. Hembrook, and says the union should have pursued what Mr. Hembrook said. In fact, Mr. Hembrook did not ever claim race discrimination. Mr. Hembrook did not even know that the union had filed a grievance on the plan of assistance. Mr. Hembrook's comments alone certainly do not form a basis upon which the union failed to meet its obligation to investigate discrimination. Without that essential element, without showing that the union knew of discriminatory treatment, there can be no ratification, there can be no acquiescence. Therefore, we would respectfully request that you affirm the district court's finding that the union defendants should be dismissed from this action.
Thank you, ma'am. Court, does he have any time? 30 seconds, sir.
Thank you. With respect to the fact there was no investigation, Mr. Hembrook and the appellant briefs point out on the assignment of classes, Ms. Salvadori had the worst class load ever assigned to anyone, that he reported all of this to the union, and that the union at no time investigated. Glasgow and the superintendent of the school cites no occasion or time whereby the union ever approached them regarding discrimination. My time is up.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The court will take the case under advisement and proceed to